This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
You're listening to TSN 1290 online, TSN1290.ca. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Richard Pollock, and Ezra Ginsberg with you. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Joining us now on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show from the Columbus Dispatch, he covers the Columbus Blue Jackets, Aaron Portsline. Aaron, good morning. Thanks very much for joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Well, good morning. Good to be with you as always.
Aaron, we want to look back at the trade deadline, which just passed about 10 days ago, a couple weeks ago at this point, the Marian Gaborik era. It sort of ended with a whimper when he was dealt to Los Angeles in exchange for Matt Fratton and some draft picks coming back to Columbus. What grade would you give Blue Jackets general manager Jarmo Kekäläinen for that deal?
Well, for the return on Gaborik, I guess I'd give him a C. I think for the entirety of the Gaborik, the arrival and the departure, I think probably a C or a, I don't know, maybe a C minus. I mean, it's not great asset management to give up Broussard, Dorsett, Moore for Gaborik and then turn around and get Fratton and picks for Gaborik. But I mean, ultimately, going for it as Jarmo did last year at the trade deadline, by that with that trade, and he was going for it. If you remember how strong the Blue Jackets finished, I thought they had a chance to make the playoffs. They lost in the last day to a tiebreaker. Sort of the nature of going for it, there is some risk there. But, I mean, ultimately, in hindsight, you have to say that they didn't get nearly what they expected from Gaborik, and the return wasn't great either. I will tell you this, that if you look at this situation, you look at the Blue Jackets and how Marian Gaborik fit in, you have a different perspective on that trade than you do if you just simply look at the names on the piece of paper. It did not work out. Marian Gaborik never really fit in with this group on the ice. He seemed to be a fine teammate. Every indication was that people liked him and vice versa. But they see this as an addition by subtraction. When he was in the lineup, this team just didn't play with the same sort of vim and vigor, a straight line hockey that they have to play to be successful. So, you know, if you're a GM, you can spend years trying to make your bad trade look good. You can chase bad money with good money. In this case, I credit to Jarmo Kekäläinen for saying, didn't work out, my mistake. I'll take the bullets on this one, but we're not going to cut off our nose to spite our face and try to make this work. We're just going to move along here, and we think this team is more than capable of making the playoffs as put together, obviously without Marian Gaborik, and now they're going to find out.
Aaron, there was a lot of talk at the trade deadline that the Blue Jackets might be interested in acquiring Ryan Kesler. He obviously has some ties to Ohio State, but we heard that Ryan Kesler wasn't willing to accept a trade to the Blue Jackets. We heard that there was some reason involving R.J. Umberger and a poisonous relationship involving him. Is that the ultimate reason why Ryan Kesler didn't end up as a Blue Jacket?
Well, I can tell you this. I don't honestly have firsthand knowledge of why Kesler did not want to play in Columbus. That was not something I reported. We reported it crediting the Vancouver Province for that. I do believe that Kesler and Umberger could play together. I think that was an issue earlier in their careers, absolutely. I know that they've had their issues with it. They, in fact, have fought before on the ice, which was almost not really even in the context of the game. It was more of a, I can't stand you, let's fight kind of fight. So there have been issues there, but R.J. Umberger took, if I may go for the pun here, umbrage with the report that Kesler wouldn't come here because of Umberger, saying it's absolutely not true, that he and Ryan have talked since then. They both have Ohio State ties, of course. They've had conversations. All R.J. Umberger wants to do is win. He thinks he could exist in a room with Ryan Kesler. Absolutely. It would be easy for him. He said lots of guys in every dressing room have other guys that they don't really care for, but they're teammates and they make it work. They want to win. I don't know, honestly, why RJ or why Ryan Kesler did not have Columbus on his approved list. My strongly informed guess is that he doesn't look at Columbus and see a team that can win the Stanley Cup this year. I think that's why he wants to go to Pittsburgh. I think that's why that seemed to be the team that he really, really wanted to go to. I think that's it. I think Kesler doesn't want to leave anything to chance. I think he wants to go to a place that's going to win. He felt like Vancouver was going to be that. Now it looks like it's going to be a long, lengthy rebuild in Vancouver. That seems to be my guess. But I honestly don't pretend to know exactly what Kessler's feelings were.
You know, Aaron, you look at the team on the ice, and if the playoffs started today, the Columbus Blue Jackets would play the New York Rangers, a team they've made obviously some trades with, as we just talked about earlier in the interview. But this team, it seems to be really coming into its own, and it has maybe the reputation around the league as being a big team, tough to handle, and a hard-working squad. Can you talk about maybe how Todd Richards is trying to instill that in the squad and how they're buying in?
Yeah, well, let me say this as a writer. It would be unbelievable to have a Rangers-Blue Jackets playoff series, especially with, I mean, my God, the storylines, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting team. I mean, and I say this with a caveat. They're a difficult team to match up against. And let me clarify that. There's no Crosby, there's no Malkin.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at their line, they've got their top three centers are Johansson, Dubinsky, and Anisimov. There are a lot of teams in the league that would love to have that down the middle. They've got some really competitive, fast, hungry guys on the wing with Foligno, with Boone Jenner, who's had a really good rookie season, R.J. Umberger, Matt Calvert, Cam Atkinson. There's a real consistency of play up and down the lineup. They get a ton of energy from their fourth line, which has had a lot of different looks, but Letestu's there, McKenzie's there, Jared Bull will be there when he's healthy, Corey Trapp has had a nice season. I mean, you get the sense playing them that there is no shift that is taken off. And, you know, this franchise has, for a long time, put teams on the ice that fans wondered if they gave a damn. And you don't ever get that sense from this team. It's not the most talented team in the world, but they play at a real pace and with a real physicality that is hard for a lot of teams to match up against.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. We're joined by Aaron Portsline of the Columbus Dispatch. Aaron, I'm sure it's just coincidence and happenstance that you didn't mention Nathan Horton in that last answer.
I didn't mention Nathan Horton.
He was obviously the big Blue Jackets, the big offseason signing by the Blue Jackets. Didn't make his season debut until January 2nd, recovering from shoulder surgery. How has he played in a little over 2 months that he's been in the lineup for the Blue Jackets?
Well, you know, if you look at when this team's really taken off, it was when Horton came into the lineup and when Bobrovsky came back from his groin injury. Having said that, and I think Nathan would be the first, I know he would be the first to admit this, that it's not there for him right now. Like, that shoulder surgery was a huge procedure. There's no such thing as minor surgery unless somebody else is having it, the joke goes, but it was a big, big surgery. I mean, bone taken off of one part of the shoulder, bolted to another part of the shoulder so that it wouldn't slip out of play. It takes time for those two bones to heal. It takes time for the muscle to regenerate. This was a big deal. And he jokingly said the other day he's not going to be able to run people until next year. But what's missing, and you can feel it, you can see it, his frustration is palpable, that the touch part of the game, the feel, the little plays along the wall, the timing, the quick snap plays, they're not there for him right now. He's gutting it out. He's playing. This is the process he has to go through. He's been a serviceable player. He's helped them spread their talent, if you will, on three lines. It's helped make three formidable lines. But he's not fully Nathan Horton just yet, and he may not be until the playoffs or the postseason.
Aaron, yesterday the Blue Jackets announced that they had signed Marco Dano to a 3-year entry-level contract. He was drafted 27th overall last year in New Jersey. I guess a two-part question on Dano. What do you think the chances are that Dano moves into the NHL next year, and where would he slot in if he ends up playing for the Blue Jackets next year? I've only seen him play a little bit in the World Juniors, so I have to admit that I haven't seen him play too much.
Yeah, and I've not seen him play in person. To me, I think him being an NHLer next year, a full-time NHLer anyways, is a long stretch. I mean, that's the one thing that this franchise has always done wrong, and it's the one thing that Kekalainen and John Davidson are just absolutely dead set that they're not going to put people in above their head. And they've got so many guys under contract. I don't see Dano making this team. I think he plays in Springfield next year. I could see call-up here and there with injuries. That's fine. But unless he comes to camp and absolutely blows people away like Boone Jenner did this year, I think you're looking at some seasoning in the minor leagues.
You know, Aaron, you mentioned Ryan Johansson. He's getting kind of the credit that he deserves for the way he's played and kind of reaching the expectations many had for him when he was drafted a few years back. What about Ryan Murray? You know, you don't hear a lot about a guy who was drafted in the top three and was many people's number one for a while in his draft year. If you watch Columbus play, he's a smooth player, makes very few mistakes for a young guy. How is he performing, and is he kind of flying under the radar in terms of young, very talented NHL defenseman?
Yeah, well, he is kind of a fly-under-the-radar kind of guy. That's the first thing. Right now, he's out of the lineup with having knee surgery a week ago. He's gone for a month or maybe 5 weeks, and as Todd Richards said the other day, it's like, not like you're losing a young guy here, it's like you're losing a veteran. That's how solid he's been on the back end. He's paired with James Wisniewski a lot this season, and the joke in Columbus is that Ryan Murray has done a really good job of bringing James along. he's just such a poised player. The reason I think he doesn't get a ton of attention is, you know, he's in a market like Columbus that has to sort of stand on top of the mountain and scream before they can attract some attention. It takes players a substantial amount of time, longer than if you were in a market like Toronto or Montreal that tends to hype their players beyond their true worth. But he doesn't have the huge shot of Shea Weber. He doesn't have the unbelievable offensive instincts, the offensive gall, if you will, of Drew Doughty. He's just a very well-rounded player. He does little things that diffuse situations unlike any young player that I've ever seen. Usually young players tend to bring kerosene to the campfire, if you will, but he puts everything out. Everything is so under control. A very, very impressive young player. I think the numbers, which are better than many would expect, I think the numbers are going to follow him as he moves along here and becomes a little more comfortable creeping up the ice, but he's been a wonderful player to watch.
And Aaron, you know, you look at Jack Johnson on the back end, a guy who was a lot of attention around him after the U.S. Olympic team was selected. And how did that affect his play? How has he played since all that news came out? And has it maybe helped him? I think we remember talking to you around that time, and Jarmo Kekalainen was kind of honest, saying, if they didn't pick him, maybe he doesn't deserve to be there, and maybe this will serve as kind of an ability for him to get better. How has that helped him?
It has, to the point where when Jack got off to a rough start after the Olympic break, there was the press box joke was maybe Todd Richards had got him from Team USA again. that's what it looked like. Jack is a really good player when he's pissed off, and sometimes I don't know if he took things for granted or if he was just struggling earlier in the season. I want to say he was minus 14 at one point, and I think he's minus 4 now since January. So we're talking about a plus 10 player in the last 2 months who logs heavy minutes against the other team's best players. He's an interesting guy. He's been an interesting player throughout his career, sort of a hard guy to read. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people that just don't like him. They just don't like his game, period. But I think if you watch him consistently, you see moments where you question the hockey sense. It's a fair thing to say. But you also see moments where you say, this guy is competing his bleep off, playing 12 minutes sometimes in the third period. Really gutsy guy, and when he's angry and motivated, very effective player.
Aaron, we've got one last question for you here. There's been lots of speculation that if the Columbus Blue Jackets don't get into the playoffs, Todd Richards' job is in jeopardy. First off, do you believe that, or is his job still safe even if the Blue Jackets don't make the playoffs this year?
Well, I go both ways on this. I think what gives even a smidge of credence to that rumor, that thought, wherever it's coming from, is the fact that Todd Richards is not a Jarmo Kekalainen or a John Davidson guy. And I don't mean that they don't support him or like the job that he's done. Simply that he doesn't have a background with them. He doesn't come into this job as their handpicked coach. So, you know, whenever that's the situation, you think maybe the coach gets fewer balls than another guy. But putting all of that aside, I don't know how anybody could look at the situation and think that Todd Richards does not deserve to keep his job. I mean, it's really easy to forget where this team was when Todd Richards took over. The lowest of the low under Scott Arneil. I mean, it was an absolutely brutal situation in all ways. The morale, the power structure, I've been here from the day one of the franchise. It's the most dysfunctional I've ever seen the situation, the franchise. And Todd Richards came in on a cleanup crew, essentially, got things righted in the right direction. And the way that this team plays night in, night out under Todd Richards, this is not a screamer and intimidator. This is your kind uncle who motivates by you not wanting to disappoint him. He has gotten a consistency of performance from this guy. Young players have come along better than they ever have in this franchise's history. The last 100 games, they're 52-31 and something crazy. I mean, one of the best records in the league over the last 100 games. I don't know how you could justify that, even if they missed the playoffs. I know that's the bottom line, but, you know, Jarmo and John Davidson came here thinking they were going to get the number one overall pick. And that's how bad this franchise seemed to be positioned. And instead, in a flash, they nearly made the playoffs last year, and they're in line to make it this year. How that guy becomes the scapegoat, I don't know that I could rectify that.
Aaron Portsline covers the Columbus Blue Jackets for the Columbus Dispatch. Aaron, thanks very much for joining us.
Anytime, guys. Thanks for having me.
Take care, Aaron. Thanks very much.
See you.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Big thank you to Aaron Portsline for joining us. In case you missed any of that interview, it will be available for download on iTunes, on IllegalCurve.com, and of course on TSN1290.ca. Reminder, 2:15 this afternoon, we open up the phone lines. We want to hear from you in regards to which unrestricted free agents the Winnipeg Jets should endeavor to acquire again for next season, i.e., which ones should they re-sign? How do you see the Jets coaching situation playing out for next year? Head coach Paul Maurice, he's also an unrestricted free agent. So 2:15 this afternoon, we open up the phone lines and we want to hear from you in regards to what the Winnipeg Jets should do about next season. It's time now for some NHL news and notes.
NHL news and notes.
We start NHL news and notes in Pittsburgh, where James Neal is out indefinitely with a concussion for the Penguins. Probably at least out, you know, like you said, indefinitely. So he wasn't feeling very good on Thursday morning. He missed practice. He played Wednesday against the Washington Capitals, but obviously had some ramifications coming out of that game, and he is out indefinitely. Obviously, we know it's a significant loss for the Penguins, but I mean, that's a team. You talk about injuries, and we talk about the Winnipeg Jets and injuries. That's a team that's been snake-bit with injuries for a lot of this season, for everybody, really, except for Crosby and Malkin.
Yeah, a couple things on James Neal, Richie. It's a significant loss. He's obviously a sniper, and when it comes around to the playoffs, they're going to depend on him, because when the Chris Kunitz, Sidney Crosby, now Lee Stempniak line, when that's not going, or Malkin's not putting the puck in the net, he's the type of guy that is a significant piece of that offense there. The injuries on defense, though, still, to me, are the bigger concerns. And that's going to be ultimately what determines if Pittsburgh is able to get back to the Stanley Cup Finals. It's, can that group of defense, without Chris Letang and Paul Martin, is that group good enough to beat the Bostons? Are they good enough to even beat a team like the Rangers or the Flyers? Penguins are playing the Flyers today, and the Flyers are giving them problems. I think it was 4-0 last time we checked. So
that's right.
The Pittsburgh Penguins have significant injury problems, and it is a concern. And you have to now say, Richie, should they have? Is it going to come back to bite them that they didn't acquire someone else? We know that they were in on Ryan Kessler. So it's a significant injury. And also, James Neal's had concussion problems before. He's had concussion problems before. And that is when you start to see him now having multiple concussions, now you start talking about, is this going to affect, you know, his ability to have a long NHL career? It's scary.
Especially because there wasn't anything, you know, particular in that Washington game on Wednesday night. It's not like he took a big hit or a hit to the head that was overly noticeable. It just said he showed up to practice Thursday morning and he said, quote unquote, he told coaches he wasn't feeling normal. So that's when he was diagnosed with a concussion.
Well, it hurts their depth up front, right? You know, you're looking at Crosby, Stepniak, and Kunitz as line one.
I should also point out Kunitz not playing tonight for Pittsburgh against Philadelphia as well.
And getting killed right now.
Yeah, 4-0 they're down to the Philadelphia Flyers.
And then you have their second line, Malkin, Jokinen, and Neal. So, I mean, that's a significant loss to that line because Malkin being able to play make for a sniper like Neal. Then you get to the depth lines, and their scoring obviously is not that level the other players, and then you get to the defense. And this team looks a little bit more flawed. I don't love this team. I love the talent. I don't love the team overall, though. And it's going to be they need Neal in that lineup to be able to score goals from the wings.
Mm-hmm.
They need to be able to help Chris Kunitz when he's back. He's not out long term.
No, it won't be a series. Yeah. He's just missing tonight's game.
So I mean, when he's back, they need to be able to support him on the wings, you know, left wing, right wing. They need to be able to produce offense and not have all the pressure to be solely on the centers there.
Yeah, another injury that happened at MTS Center on Wednesday night when the Jets and the Canucks played. Ryan Kessler is going to be out a couple weeks after he's diagnosed with a sprained knee. Probably not as significant as the Neal injury in that the Canucks probably weren't going to make the playoffs anyways. But, you know, Kessler now done for a couple weeks. And, of course, that's the risk when you hold on to a guy is that, you know, maybe he suffers a catastrophic injury and then you're, you know, behind the eight ball when it comes to trading him. Obviously, this isn't catastrophic, but he is out for, you know, 2 or 3 weeks after the hit by Jim Slater.
Yeah, and I imagine, Drew, we'll be talking about Ryan Kessler a lot, especially in the offseason, because we know that he requested a trade, and they were trying to move him. And Ryan Kessler, for me, this injury, and you mentioned that it was at the MTS Center, and then after the game we saw him walking around in a knee brace there. But for Ryan Kessler, it's just a year that's gone from bad to worse. Again, like the Canucks, he doesn't do very well at the Olympics for the U.S., doesn't have the type of season that he wanted to have under John Tortorella, and now he's going to miss basically half of the remainder of the season. So it doesn't, as you mentioned, it doesn't matter as much because the Vancouver Canucks aren't really a threat to make the playoffs the way they've played. They're still in it, but I think we'd probably all agree that we think it's going to be between Dallas and Phoenix for that last wild card spot. So it's just unfortunate for Kessler, a guy similar to James Neal. He's had so many injury problems, and you have to think, Richie, how does a team want to go after Kessler knowing that over the last 2 or 3 years, it's just one injury after another with that guy?
And if he's effective, he's got to play a certain way, and that certain way may lead to injuries, and that leads to you know, worries about durability. I think, as you're certainly right about that.
Last news and notes, Nicklas Backstrom, we of course remember the gold medal game at the Sochi Olympics. He was, you know, banned from the game for a positive drug test right before the game. It was announced yesterday that he will still receive a silver medal after the International Olympic Committee laid the blame for the positive drug test at the feet of the Team Sweden doctor and not Nicklas Backstrom himself. So probably, not really not a good outcome regardless for Nicklas Backstrom, but his name is cleared, for lack of better definition.
Right, and
who cares?
Well, what did he take, cold medication? Yeah. I mean, come on. I mean, it's not like the guy was caught doing crazy, terrible drug. I mean, he took something that he didn't think was banned, so it's nice for him to get the silver medal.
I'll tell you who's not going to be back for the next Olympics. It's that Swedish team doctor, because he really fouled it up. Not that it was going to matter for Team Sweden, probably.
It wouldn't have mattered. Give him his medal. Who cares? It's not a gold anyways.
Rich's little arrogance coming through there. I like it. Let's head to break. When we come back, Frank Provenzano from ESPN.com is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show. The podcast on TSN 1290.ca.
2 hours down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Reminder, in about 15 minutes' time, give or take, we're going to go to the phones, hear your opinion on what the Winnipeg Jets should do with their pending unrestricted free agents. You can give us a call, 204-780-1290, 204-780-1290, in about 15 minutes. But for now, we head back to the Hockey Show Hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show a regular guest on the program. You can read his work on ESPN Insider. He's also the former assistant general manager of the Dallas Stars, Frank Provenzano. Frank, good afternoon, and thanks very much for joining us.
Oh, no problem, guys.
Frank, we want to go back in time about 10 days, couple weeks now, to the NHL trade deadline, where obviously moves were made to some teams getting ready for the playoff stretch drive, other teams waving the white towel on undoubtedly what would be a disappointing season for them. Was there any one trade in particular that surprised you more than the others?
I'd say just as an overall comment, I was a little surprised at sort of the return on some of the defensemen that went. Usually they're in pretty short supply this time of year. I think that's part of a trend that I think you started to see over the last couple of trade deadlines. The teams are really reluctant to give up first-round picks these days. And then in a specific trade, I was a little surprised, I guess, that Washington added Dustin Penner to that group, given the fact that, they sort of, I thought, if anything, they were just going to try and address their defensive back end.
Frank, we have to ask you about Martin St. Louis. That was a huge trade before the trade deadline. He asked Stevie Y for a trade and only wanted to go to really one team. Did you ever have to deal with a player who demanded a trade, and how were you able to deal with that?
Well, yeah, I mean, players do ask for trades, and I guess, you know, from my standpoint, when a player signs a contract, it's tough for him to demand a trade. He can certainly ask for one, but your responsibility at that point is in management is to get as much return as you can for that player. And I think in the case of Tampa, they did very, very well for Martin St. Louis, given the fact that I think they only had one team to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
We had a similar situation a few years ago when Brad Richards became available, in that we speculated that we were, you know, one of a handful of teams he'd be willing to go to, and I think we gave up a promising young goalie in Mike Smith and a fourth-round pick, and then Jeff Halpern as a sort of utility player for them. But my experience, to answer your question, is when a player demands or asks for a trade, your first responsibility is you would try to accommodate the request, both for the player and for the fact that you don't want an unhappy player in your locker room, but you have to do it on your time and not theirs.
Yeah, in terms of that, Frank, do you ever worry about the slippery slope? One guy demands a trade, he sees that trade request is granted, that other players may possibly do the same?
I think so, and that's why I think, you know, you have to explain to the player, if we can, you know, we'll see what's out there, and if we can accommodate you, we can, but until that time, you've signed a contract with, you know, whatever team you've signed a contract with, and we expect you to live up to that. And most of the players understand that part of it as well. You know, what's tough these days is the number of no-trade, no-move clauses that are out there, and I guess the easiest way to deal with those is to be fairly judicious in your application of them from a team standpoint. My feeling was I always tried to either do the limited no move, no trade, and then it could move up and down in terms of the number of teams based on team success, or to do a no trade clause, but then as the length of the commitment went out, the ability to move that asset increased for the team, because, you know, the road to hell is paved with good intentions and relationships go, you know, when a player demands a trade, the relationship is not what it was when they signed the contract with that team. And so you can't predict the future, so you want to, or I always try to give the general manager the flexibility down the road to move the asset if it didn't work out.
Frank, when you get a request, is it player coming into the coaches or general manager's office to make that request, or is it a call from an agent?
It depends. In where the player's at in his career, if it's a younger player, it's usually a call from the agent to the general manager. If a player's, a little older or more significant in stature or has a relationship with the general manager, he may go in and just, meet with him and make that request himself. So there's no real set protocol. And, ideally you're not dealing with a whole bunch of these as a management team because it usually means that things aren't going as rosy as you planned. Mm-hmm. But it is usually a call from the agent, I would say.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, online at tsn1290.ca. We're joined by Frank Provenzano. He covers hockey for ESPNinsider.com. He is also a former assistant general manager of the Dallas Stars. Frank, after the trade deadline, of course, came the general manager's meetings earlier this week. Three really sort of main recommendations that came out, the first being about the long change in the 4-on-4 overtime, and then a couple of alterations to the face-offs, one about the moving the hash marks, another one about a face-off violation will result in the violator having to start about a foot behind where he previously was. What were your thoughts about the recommendations that came out of the general manager's meetings?
I think these meetings typically produce sort of changes around the margins, which they should. I mean, you don't want to necessarily be drastically changing the rules year over year and sort of ping-ponging around. And I think the general consensus, the general consensus is that, and I think everyone shares this, is they want more games to be settled outside of the shootout. And I know, working for Dallas, we probably would have made the playoffs the last couple of years if we had maybe been more successful in the shootouts and maybe a team like Phoenix was less successful. So you're always going to find sort of teams that are good at the shootouts. They don't want to change anything, and teams that maybe have not gotten in or have been penalized by the shootouts want to change things. But I think there's an overall appetite to have the shootout play less of an impact on the standings than it has been. And I think the other changes are just an effort that's been continuing, and that's to penalize low skill plays. And it started with the icing rule, which fundamentally, in my mind, changed the game to a certain degree. And it ended up having a lot of players, that were able to, particularly defensive players and defensemen, last in the league in their late 30s. You have to be able to cover ground with your legs now and remove position by body position. And I think these changes that are coming about are just an attempt to reward skill and penalize low-skill plays. And I think the game is quicker as a result.
At the GM meetings, Frank, you saw Mike Gillis, who's obviously that team has gone through quite a bit lately. He addressed the media and some interesting questions and then answers regarding John Tortorella. It did seem like a guy who is worn down, and the media pressure probably has a fair amount to do with that. How do you guard against having the media pressure and fan pressure wear you down as a manager at the NHL level?
Well, it's hard. I mean, particularly when you're in a high-profile market that's had success, and Vancouver just looks like they look like an entree that's chocolate ice cream and onions right now. two things that they're just ingredients that don't go together. I mean, they were in here. Was it last week or the week before? Well, I guess it was the week before, and I think they lost 6-1, and they just don't even resemble the team that, they're not a bad hockey team, but they are just not playing well right now. And I think you have to, instead of, you can't really manage it in the sense that it's going to be an intense, so you just have to, prepare yourself to deal with it, and It's a tough slog that they're in right now in terms of dealing with the media. There's going to be, I think it's only potentially going to get, unfortunately, a little tougher there for them because they are a high-profile team, and they've just, they haven't sprung a hole. They've that's the Costa Concordia there. They've driven into a side of an island, it looks like.
Frank, with the compliance buyouts for a general manager and an assistant general manager, how difficult is it to go to the owner and say that you want to buy out a player and use one of those compliance buyouts, especially when the general manager and the assistant general manager signed the player to that contract?
Well, as Bob Gainey once said, you know, when you're trying to build a winning hockey team, you spill a little milk on the way to the barn. But that is a call you'd rather not make. But having said that, it is your job to put your own sort of, you know, stake in it aside and recommend to your owner what is best in your view for the future of your hockey team. And it's not a great feeling to basically admit that you made a mistake, but there's an old saying as well that your first mistake is almost always your least expensive one. And if you, you know, if you don't recognize that and deal with it, you're oftentimes then just throwing good money after bad. It's dead money, and you know, you're not getting the performance that you had originally hoped. I mean, anytime you do a contract, you're making a bet. And really, what you're really doing is managing performance risk. You're trying to get the performance that you're allocating those dollars to, particularly in the cap system, right? So what you're basically saying is we're going to have less dead money by buying them out than we do if we have them on our roster.
Mm-hmm. And a final question for you, Frank. In terms of the collective bargaining agreement, which you're very well acquainted with, the four call-up rule, we hear about that and the restrictions on the NHL teams being able to call up players and emergency call-up rule. Can you expand on that and explain it to the listeners so in terms of what to expect over the next month and a half or so, or month really?
In terms of?
Like how does it work? Like you are able to call up a certain amount of players, and what happens if you have too many injuries where you need to recall another player, and how does that all work?
Well, essentially you have an emergency situation is any time your playing roster falls between 12 healthy forwards, six healthy defensemen or two healthy goaltenders. And the day, I believe, of the trade deadline at like noon, there is no more roster restriction. Normally during the season you can carry 23 skaters.
23, yeah.
21 skaters and two goaltenders. Well, actually any combination, but you can carry a 23-man roster. And on the day of the trade deadline, that roster restriction goes away, and what comes in its place is you can only recall four on regular recall. You only have four recalls. So what I always tried to be going into the trade deadline was an emergency. Because then you can sort of move guys up and down, and you maintain that emergency situation. You cannot create an emergency situation by sending a player down and putting yourself under that limit by an action that you took. Okay. You can only go under that playing strength limit by someone getting hurt. And outside of that, you've got four moves to make between the deadline and the end of the regular season that you can recall players. Actually, I believe it goes into the playoffs, and it leads to, or at least it did, I'm not sure under this CBA, I can't quite recall, It led to a situation where teams whose minor league teams got knocked out of the playoffs early had an advantage, because then they could just recall any players they wanted from their minor league team to be on this super large taxi squad. And if your team was still in the minor league playoffs, you were still stuck with that four recall rule. I'm not quite sure I really explained it to your listeners very well, but basically after the trade deadline, if a guy's not hurt, if you're not in emergency, you have four moves to make.
Frank Provenzano is the former assistant general manager of the Dallas Stars. You can see his work now on ESPN.com. It's in the insider area. Frank, thanks as always for joining us this afternoon on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Always a pleasure, guys. Big tilt tonight up there in Winnipeg.
Yeah, absolutely. Tomorrow night, actually. But
tomorrow night, sorry.
That's okay. Close enough. A huge game. We've been talking about it for the last two hours at this point.
That's a big one. If Winnipeg doesn't win that one, I think it's going to be tough for them.
I think that was we would agree with your assessment there. Thanks, Frank.
All right, guys. Thank you.
Take care. Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to go to the phone lines, get your opinion on which unrestricted free agents the Winnipeg Jets should be signed. What should the Jets do with head coach Paul Maurice? We want to hear from you. 780-1290, 204-780-1290. Phone lines are now open.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
20 minutes past the hour. Welcome back to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN1290, TSN1290.ca. Phone lines are now open, 204-780-1290. We want to hear from you. Which unrestricted free agents should the Jets re-sign next year? What should the Jets do with unrestricted free agent head coach Paul Maurice?
What about Twitter?
Twitter, of course, as well, at Illegal Curve on Twitter. We'll read your tweets. We'll take your calls, everything under the sun. This segment is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. For over 25 years, Rumors has been Winnipeg's home for the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tonight at Rumors, Chris Porter in town. He was the winner of Last Comic Standing Season 4. I believe there are very few tickets available for the 10 p.m. show tonight. You can buy them online, rumorscomedyclub.com, or give them a call, 204-488-4520. Let's head to the phone lines. We start line two, Aaron in River Heights. Aaron, good afternoon and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Yeah, thanks, guys. I'll be very brief, but I have a few important points about the hockey, if you can just bear with me for a minute. Anyways, I've been following the Jets, of course, ever since they got back into the city, and just like anything else, they took over Atlanta, and it takes a while to get in the right players. I believe right now, and this is my opinion, I think the main reason why Cheveldayoff didn't make any moves is because of significant injuries. That's the number one point. Number two is for next year or during the draft, this is a situation or thought that may be of interest, and I'll let you guys think about it after. Bogosian, I don't know the other guy, Jokinen, Setoguchi, and the other small defensemen they have. My suggestion is if they put a package together and maybe trade him to Edmonton or Calgary and get maybe Yakupov or somebody like that and maybe a couple of draft picks. That's one situation. Okay, so something to keep in mind, please. And regarding the coach, I believe Paul Maurice, of course, he's moved around quite a bit and he's had his successes and everything. But I think you have to give a coach, first of all, the players, to basically utilize and move in the positive direction. I believe the Jets are probably about 2-3 years away, but for next year, I think they're going to have to turn over at least 3 or 4 players to get that consistency. But I think they should give Maurice at least 3 years on that. I'll hang up on that. Thanks, guys, for your time, and I appreciate your answers, please.
Aaron, thanks very much for the call. Your thoughts on what Aaron had to say there, Richard?
Well, you know, I mean, the Oilers always sat there as kind of a team, to Aaron's point, as a team that, you know, Jets need some forwards, had an excess of defensemen. There could have been a trade match there. Still maybe could be a trade match there. Now, it might take some significant pieces. If you're talking about a Yakupov or an Eberle or somebody like that, you're going to have to ship out a Bogosian or somebody like that whose trade his no trade doesn't kick in yet until his UFA status, which is signed through. But the point is, I mean, that's not something, you know, you hear Philly rumblings. You've heard a little chatter about Edmonton once in a while. It's an idea worth considering in terms of adding offensive firepower to a team that we've seen over the past little while hasn't scored in some time. And I said, you know, if Maurice wants it back here, I think a 3-year deal, maybe a 4-year deal, even 3 is probably what you're going to see, would be something that he secures.
Yeah, Aaron made some good points there. And he's right in the sense that if you're not going to go out and replace Olli Jokinen and Devin Setoguchi, there's a chance that Jokinen and Setoguchi are re-signed. But if those guys
I don't think there's any chance that Higuchi's resigned.
Well,
none.
Well, okay.
Jokinen, I do.
Jokinen, okay.
Yeah.
So if they're not going to bring in free agents that, and not make a move, then yes, that's when three or four prospects, either from the AHL or coming right out of junior, are going to have to fill those spots. But that's the big debate moving forward. And the biggest, the signing up the core has already happened for Chevy. He signed up the Littles and the Wheelers and the Bogos and the Enstroms, Kane. All of these guys have been signed. So right now, it's how are you going to improve your team with what you've got and maybe supplement that with a couple of free agent acquisitions, or does that have to come by trade? It's going to have to be one or the other.
780-1290-204-780-1290. You can get in on the conversation. We want to hear from you on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. Our buddy Chris Barron out in Pittsburgh, actually Washington, D.C., but a big Pittsburgh Penguins fan, says, give Paul Maurice a three-year deal. If you can bring back Jokinen for cheap, also do it. And you need a veteran scoring threat. So I think Chris is probably onto something there.
Well, let's be honest here. Devin Setoguchi has not worked as a someone who you can put out there on the second line and get offensive production from.
Right.
So that's something that needs to be addressed. They gave up a second round pick for Setoguchi, and he just hasn't given them enough offense. It's plain and simple. He's not a defensive player. He's a winger who you count on for goals. They've given him a lot of opportunity. If you look at Setoguchi, he gets a lot of time on the power play, Richie. They put him out there, and they've given him all of the opportunities to get goals, and he hasn't. So I think, you know, Chris makes a good point, and Paul Maurice, the way that he's had the Jets playing since he's taken over, you can't argue with Maurice deserving a three-year contract.
OC Daddy on Twitter says the Jets should try to sign Jokinen and Setoguchi. So there's a vote of confidence for Setoguchi. Very few of those so far. Says decent third line with those guys. Trade Bufflin for a solid stay-at-home defenseman. Let's go to Greg in Waverly Heights. Greg, welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Hey, welcome. Thanks for taking my call.
Hey, Greg. Greg, how's it going, bud?
Fine. Long time no here for one of the three of you or four of you in that studio. So,
Greg, we'll always take your call, by the way, especially if I'm here.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Jokinen, yes. Devin Setoguchi, 50-50. I would like to see them getting a bottom six as per the column by one Gary Lawless today and stuff, because they're really struggling in regards to bottom six help. Mr. Paul Maurice, his winning percentage, 6.67, 11.5-2. If you do the math, if he was employed by the start of the year, he'll be running a 50-22-10 record. So good for 110 points. This guy needs to. They should be getting him to sign on the dotted line for, I will say, at least a 5 or 6 year deal. A 6 year coaching deal. Pay him around $850,900 a year to coach this team, because once again, 50 meaning 5-0 wins. That would basically be first in the Central, probably first in the Western Conference if he was employed by the start of the season and was not doing television for the NHL on TSN. It's a no brainer.
Greg, thanks very much for the call, buddy.
Ciao.
Your thoughts on Greg's comments there, guys?
Well, Greg.
Greg's obviously a big fan of Paul Maurice.
Oh,
there.
Well, he's also our biggest fan, so Greg's a great guy. Obviously, Maurice's winning percentage in those 19 games, you can't obviously just translate that to what the record would be. But his point is well taken in that he has had success here. His winning percentage, almost 70%. Mm-hmm. And that was with that run there, and it's normalized a little bit, but the results speak for themselves. He's done a good job here. He's cleaned up a mess. There was a messy situation here in Winnipeg, and you know, they were at a certain point in the season, the Jets were, you know, in danger of really falling out of it and down to the bottom three or four teams in the NHL. So he's done a good job, and he's gotten a lot out of a lot of players. And I think Greg's going a little far with a 5 or 6 year deal, but I definitely think Maurice has earned a 3 or 4 year deal.
Guys, let's go to break. When we come back, we got Grant, Dave, and Martin. They're up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Phone lines are open, 204-780-1290.
You're listening to
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
The phone lines are open, 204-780-1290. We want to know what you would do with the Winnipeg Jets pending unrestricted free agents. Devin Setoguchi, Olli Jokinen, Al Montoya, Chris Thorburn, Adam Pardy, and head coach Paul Maurice, all pending unrestricted free agents. Give us a call, 204-780-1290. You can also reach us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve, to give us your comments via Twitter. Let's head back to the phone lines. Grant in Crescentwood, you're on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Thanks for your patience and holding on there.
Hey, no worries, guys. Thanks for having me. Long-time listener, first-time caller. I think we need to start at the top. Maurice is a gem. I think he'd be the best available coach in terms of experience to bring in. He adds leadership, he adds direction, and he's media savvy, and he's consistent in his demeanor. So I think it's a no-brainer if he wants to be here to bring him in and lock him up, for 3 years, I guess, or 4 years, or however long it seems to fit. Devin Setoguchi, I think, and no offense to him, I think he's been a capable NHLer for a long time, but, I wouldn't mind seeing the door hit him in the butt on the way out. he's just not, he doesn't fit with what we're trying to do. And I think we're pretty deep on the right side. If you look what we got Wheeler, we got Frolik, who I would attempt to sign for some decent term if the money's right. I think he's probably been one of our most versatile players and best players, most consistent all year. Obviously, we have Buff on the right side, and then I would definitely re-sign Chris Thorburn. Matt Halaschuk, if the price is right, would be a nice fit as a 12 or 13th forward, kind of where he's at. Where we really have holes is going to be up the middle. I mean, I think, Scheifele going down has exposed a huge hole right in the middle of the ice. And I don't know if Jokinen and Kane is a good fit. So, it's that old song, Jokinen and Kane from South Park, they just don't splice. So if the price is right on Jokinen and there's no one else available, you sign him, but if not, you got to look for someone who can take faceoffs. And I mean, he's been moderately effective, but he's not your high 50s in terms of percentages, I don't think. So that would be, priorities. Everyone else, I think, is kind of neither here nor there, really. It's Pardy, again, if the price is right and you don't have someone who's ready to take his spot coming up from the Rock, then you got to go with what you can get, right? But we have an abundance of 12th and 13th, place forwards and real big holes, on our third line, right? And we need to get better if we can. And I don't know that there's necessarily going to be guys that are pushing up from the Rock just yet. So with those guys that we do have coming up, from junior, like the Kozmichuks and the Patans that are going to be playing on the Rock next year, I think we have to move some of our sort of B-level prospects, if you can call them that, out maybe to a place like Vancouver, who's got a tremendous hole in terms of, having that sort of 22 to 24, 25-year-old player that could push for a spot on them, maybe give them some prospects, maybe get some value back to improve in that third-line position. Who knows who that is?
Grant, appreciate the call. Thanks very much.
I like this. It's good.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Grant. Thanks very much.
No, Grant makes some really good points, and I think a lot of these players, even though they're depth players, fourth-line guys, I think you guys know how much I love Thorbs, and I think you still re-sign him, and I think that if you can get Halaschuk, another guy like Grant mentioned, he signed a two-way deal.
I don't really like Halaschuk. I wouldn't bring him back personally, just in terms of what they need as on that point. But one thing I liked, and Grant was a knowledgeable call. One thing I liked, you talk about Jokinen and how does he fit with the players that they have. Like if they're bringing back Jokinen, say Kane plays with Scheifele, for example, or Kane plays with Jokinen. We know that really doesn't work, as Grant mentioned. But who does Jokinen play with on the left and right wings? Because if it's going to be scorers, he can't play with scorers because he's a scorer. So I think that's something to factor into as well.
Right, he's not a defensive forward, and ideally you'd like to bring someone in
exactly,
and to play that third-line center who's going to be more of a checker.
Ideally, you target a guy I like Some people don't like him. A guy like Dave Boland. I mean, who knows what happens in Toronto? Who knows what happens with his health? But that's a guy you want to plug into your third line.
He's got two Stanley Cups. That's not bad.
Yeah. It's going to be expensive.
At Donnie Karps on Twitter says the Jets must re-sign Michael Frolik. He's been the most consistent player on the Jets this season. Let's go back to the phone lines. 204-780-1290. Dave is heading towards Selkirk. Dave, you're on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Nope. Looks like Dave, we lost.
Well,
Dave.
I know what that means. Oh. Dave. That means Dave is in Selkirk. He was heading to Selkirk. He waited on the phone for so long. Now he's there.
Now he's past Selkirk. Now
he's gone past Selkirk. Okay, let's go back to Martin in River Heights. Martin, you're on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Welcome to the program.
Hi. I now have my son captured in the front seat of the car. First of all, my big beef is, before I get into anything else, is why do we have so little coverage of St. John's when obviously they got a dynamite team and we got a lot of dynamite talent there? And it's almost like it's kept out of circulation of the public in Winnipeg.
Well, it's a good point. I mean, they have really turned their season around. Michael Hutchinson was recalled. He's been having a great year in St. John's. We have Robin Short of the St. John's Telegram on quite regularly on Illegal Curve to talk about the Ice Caps. But
yeah. Keith McCambridge, head coach of the Ice Caps, was on the Rona Roundtable earlier this week. So, yeah, we obviously trying to give coverage, and the Ice Caps are doing well, so that's going to continue. What about the Jets, Martin? What do you think about the Jets?
Okay, with the Jets, I look to, do we have a goalie in the system that's ready to come up to replace Montoya with eventually taking over for Padlick?
There's not a clear-cut goaltender like a lot of the other teams have in the NHL. You know, there's no John Gibson on the horizon like there is in Anaheim or Corey Schneider like there was in Vancouver when he was with the Moose. So there's not a clear-cut guy right there now.
Okay, then you sign Montoya for another year. I was attempting to bring back Jokinen, but I was listening, and he's not a great fit with what's there. So you're going to have to accomplish and bring something else into play with Jokinen, which doesn't make any sense.
Right. I think that's a good point, Martin, because when Olli Jokinen was signed 2 summers ago, and he was given a 2-year, $9 million contract, which is big money, he was signed to be a second-line center. He wasn't signed to be a third-line center. Mark Scheifele has emerged. He might be the future number one center, most likely will be, and before Brian Little. So right now, are you bringing him back as a third-line center, or really are you going to bring someone else that's better suited for that role? So I think, you make a good point.
Maybe this is where we go and get a free agent or, take an asset. If we don't have something that's on the farm, like maybe a Lowry or somebody that's ready to move, then take some assets and get somebody that could fit into Maurice's system.
Martin, appreciate the call. Thanks very much for listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show today.
Oh, you guys are welcome. Thank you.
A lot of calls from River Heights. These two guys right here. Drew, you're not a River Heights boy.
I'm an Osborne Village guy
right
now.
These two guys are River Heights, so I love these River Heights calls.
204-780-1290 is the phone number. You can get in on the conversation. What should the Jets do with their pending unrestricted free agents, and what should they do with head coach Paul Maurice?
People seem more open to bringing back Jokinen. I'm a little bit surprised. I've heard a lot of the rumblings now about bringing back Jokinen. I'm personally not in favor of it. I think there's better options, whether it be via free agency, whether it be via trade. I think there's better fits, but and I don't know. I mean, you've heard rumblings. Maybe they'd entertain it, but how much would it be? I mean, I wouldn't give him a 2-year deal.
Well, I don't think he's getting $4.5 million again.
No, I agree with that. I mean, I assume he's going to seek a 2-year deal. He's going to get as many years as he can. I mean, why did he come here? He knew he was going to win here. He wanted money, right? And he's more than entitled to do that. But the point is, he'll probably do the same thing this time. So whoever gives him the most cash is where he's going to go. I just wonder if the Jets will be that team. You can't give him 2 years, though.
Brian is in Waverly Heights. Brian, you're not a fan of Devin Setoguchi. Welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Thanks. All year I've been waiting to call in, just holding my... so I don't say anything rude. First of all, great show. I love your show.
Thanks, Brian.
Thanks, Brian.
You're welcome. Jokinen, first of all, no. Purdy, yes. Ellerby, no. But let's get to Setoguchi. I've watched this guy for a year and was really looking forward to watching him, and it's brutal. He goes against everything the Jets stand for. I just wonder why they keep giving him ice time. I just can't believe we don't have somebody else up here. I'd rather watch a farmhand anytime. This man goes through the motions. he just sort of goes for the puck and just slowly enough that he never gets there, so he doesn't get hit, doesn't get hurt. And it's just revolting all year long. It's just the same thing. Whenever he's close to the puck, he never comes away with it. He never makes a pass, or rarely, I should say. And just, it's been a long year watching this guy, and I'd rather see a far man that there right now.
Brian, appreciate the call. Thanks for listening.
And I mean, you're good. If Brian's been listening, he knows that I'm not Devin Setoguchi's biggest fan. I think a lot of what Brian said, actually all of it, I agree with. I mean, he goes through the motions. There's a lack of intensity there. For a guy who can skate and shoot, you hardly ever see it. He's not engaged in the game. There's a few games that he is engaged. If you see him engaged in a game, which happened about 3 weeks ago, he can be a factor. I realize he's not playing with top-end talent like he did in San Jose and good talent like he was in Minnesota. I appreciate that. I appreciate he's played some of the season on the left wing, and he's a natural right winger. It's another thing the Jets have to do. They have to stop playing left and right wingers on the opposite sides because of the lack of depth. They need to address that in the offseason.
Well, we've seen how Alexander Ovechkin, how much for him to change, right?
But like he can choose. Like the thing about like a guy like Setoguchi's never played left side as far as I know. And guys like Bufflin, they try on the left side once in a while. Thorburn, they're all right wingers. So that's just a depth issue. You got to go out and sign some guys who can play your bottom lines. When we said that for many, many times on this show.
And I know we've got other callers here, Drew, but I think Brian's point about why do they keep playing him so much, it's because he's on a one-way deal, and they gave up a second-round pick. They acquired Devin Setoguchi to improve their secondary scoring. So they sought out him, and that's why he's playing so much, because they are giving him the opportunity to succeed, and he hasn't. And that's most likely why he won't be back. And I don't know that for sure, but I would assume that.
Let's head to break. When we come back, Marcel and then Rowdy, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. The phone lines are open at 204-780-1290.
You're listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on tsn1290.ca.
One final segment this Saturday afternoon here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thanks to all our callers. You can still get in 204-780-1290. We'll try to get to you before the end of the show. You can also get us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. The question of the day was, which of the Jets' unrestricted free agents would you want to see re-signed? Jokinen, Setoguchi, Montoya, Pardy, Thorburn, and head coach Paul Maurice. Let's head back to the phone lines. Marcel is in St. Boniface. Marcel, thanks for joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Good afternoon. Always a pleasure listening to you, and this is my first time calling in. So have a question, first of all. What does an NHL coach make on average now?
Well,
like, they don't... caller earlier who said sign more at $800,000 a year is the reasonable feasible.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're not always released, Marcel, in the terms. I know Tortorella's making $2 million a year. I think that's on the high side. I think most guys are making around 1 to 1.5 is what we think.
Yeah, I think that's kind of all that Maurice would fetch right now. He hasn't hurt his saleability at all. Secondly, I think from my point of view, it's a little early to crown him. Not necessarily give him a contract, but I don't think he's necessarily proven that he's the greatest thing since sliced bread. He's done a good job so far, but his record is 0-6 in his last six games, so, or 0-3-3 or whatever it is.
Right, that's 0-6. Yeah.
So off to a great start to begin with, but lately it's been sagging. As far as free agents, I think Jokinen and Setoguchi, if you can't get anything for them, just don't re-sign them. They really haven't, although it seems from what I've read that Jokinen is a fit in the dressing room, leadership thing, but I don't know that his dollars and his performance on the ice have made him an essential part of the team. I really like Michael Frolik. He's the find of the century for the Jets. I mean, he's a wonderful hockey player. Thorburn is great, and great as far as, you know, fourth line and doing whatever he's asked to do, giving 100% and more most nights. I think Kalischuk, until he got hurt, he was doing fairly well on the left side. What's his name? Shifley in the middle there at one point in the year. They were starting to really get some chemistry on that line with the score. So I think betting on the dollars again, I think he's a keeper.
Marcel, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate the comments today on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Thank you very much.
Take care, Marcel. Let's head out to the Netherlands. Rody, the Dutch Jets fan, you're back on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Rody?
Thanks, Scott.
There we go.
There you go, Rody. How you doing?
We got Rody back.
Yeah. Hi, how are you guys doing?
Very well, thank you. What's your take on the Jets, and what should they do with their unrestricted free agents?
Well, I think Party and Thorburn should be resigned. There should be no doubt about them, as well on Frolik. And Paul Maurice, I think I would compare the situation to Toronto with Randy Carlyle and just give him a shot for 2 years and see if he can put a mark on the team.
Thanks, Rody, for the call.
Yeah, Rody, appreciate the call.
All the way from the Netherlands. That's unreal.
Yeah, but apparently we're big in the Netherlands.
And Carlisle, though, if you remember, same thing to Rody's point, and it's a good one. Carlisle was brought in at the end of the year, similar to Maurice, on a non-playoff team, mm-hmm. to get an idea of what he had and was able to build towards the following year. Now, of course, the following year was a lockout, but hey, I mean, they exceeded expectations last year by taking the Boston Bruins to Game 7 of the first round of the playoffs, and of course, Boston went on to lose in the final. So, yeah, you know, Party is a guy, we haven't really talked about Party, but Party is a guy, do they think he will be, I mean, the question is he's going to be a 7 or 8 guy, I assume. They probably like Ellerby a little more and age on his side, so you think maybe they want to push Stewart down a slot. I think they need a top four guy, not a top six. They don't need a bottom two guy, they need a top four guy on the left side, so I think that'll be interesting. I know we got one more call.
Glenn in LaSalle, you're on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Hey, thanks for taking my call, guys. A couple comments. I think that Setoguchi and Ole have to go. Not that I don't like Ole. I think he's a great guy, but I don't think he's got what it takes to play in the West in the physical aspect. I think that Party brings a physical game, and I think that's what you need for this style of hockey. The other comment is, I'm not sure if this is the time to trade Bufflin in the offseason. And my only reason for saying that is I think him playing up front has been kind of an experiment to see how the D play without him. And I think that for the money, I think we can get a guy to play right wing on a third line any day for what we would trade Bufflin. And my last comment is, do we bring Bermi back now that Noel's gone? If that is true, that him and Noel did not get along, maybe Bermi Straff comes back into the picture. Thanks for the call, guys. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for calling in. The Bermi thing's interesting. You know, I would be surprised if he came back with the Jets.
I believe he's under contract for one more year.
I know, I'm talking about even after that.
And he's been playing very well in the KHL.
Even with the Noel issue aside, I would be surprised if he ends up back in the Jets. Not surprised if he comes back to the NHL, but I would be surprised if it was with the Jets.
Right, and it's a good call from Glenn on the topic of Party and Bufflin and all that interesting point. But really, you know, with the way he's played, and he didn't have a good relationship with Claude Noel. Bermistrov and Noel didn't, but that's really to be determined. He's very young, and I think he enjoys playing in Russia. So I think it's a good point, though, that he made on those other players.
Apologies to Tim in Grant Park. We're not going to be able to get to your call. We have to wrap up the program. We do it every week with cheers and jeers.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And jeers.
No, not good enough.
He's a bad boy.
I never seen something like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Richard, you're ready to start it off.
First of all, thanks. Good calls. Thanks, people. Thanks to the listeners for calling in. Sorry we couldn't get to Tim there. Fred Shiro, his father, Manitoba boy,
yep,
the coach of the Broad Street Bullies, gets a statue on the Spectrum grounds from the Philadelphia Flyers. Was recently inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame. That's a great honor, giving him a statue. I like the fact they're doing it. He passed away in 1990, but he's certainly not forgotten, and I think that's a nice tribute.
That's right. As a cheer or jeer?
How could I not cheer the Dallas Stars medical staff and medical staffs really across the NHL, across all sports? What happened with Rich Peverly was really scary, and they responded quickly, and it looks like he's going to be okay, and even though he's injured, but I'm cheering the Dallas Stars medical staff, absolutely, and the Columbus Blue Jackets medical staff.
Very well said. I'm going to wrap up cheers and jeers. I'm going to cheer all of our Paralympic athletes, not only the ones playing hockey, but all the Paralympic athletes. The Canadian men's sledge hockey team won bronze over Norway. I believe that was either earlier today or yesterday. I apologize, but big cheer to all of the
U.S. won gold.
Yeah, U.S. won gold. Yep. So big cheer to all the Paralympic athletes still taking place over there in Sochi, Russia. And if you really want to see some inspirational professional athletes. Check out the Paralympics. You can find them online, and I believe they're also on television as well. So big cheer to them as well. That's it for today in the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A big thank you to all of our callers for their contributions in the last half an hour, last 45 minutes of the show. Big thank you to our guests, Richard Durrett of ESPNDallas.com, Aaron Portsline of the Columbus Dispatch, and Frank Provenzano, an ESPN Hockey Insider. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, and CompuStitch Embroidery Design. You can follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com. Thursday night, NHL Midweek. Note the special day and time Thursday night for NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290. For producer Michael Remus and producer Tim, for Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
You've been listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
Catch the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca.